Black hair has been deemed by many as bad hair that needs to be permed to be accepted in society. For many, their self-esteem is wrapped up in their hair. The success in their career or relationships in life is associated with how good their hair looks. And for a lot of people, black hair is considered bad hair and limits just how far you can go in life. The caring for of black hair is a major economic industry that has a rich history that very few people understand. In the fall of this year, 2021, Dr. Tamika Ellington and her team will bring to life the history, culture, the politics, and joy of black hair in their upcoming exposition, Textures, the History and Art of Black Hair. Hair has been a controversial issue in black communities since the start of the Atlantic slave trade. Within that struggle, artists around the world have found the strength to breathe pride and joy back into a community deprived of cultural love. In this episode, Dr. Ellington is going to share with us why this remains an important topic even today. Dr. Tamika Ellington is an associate professor at the Kent State University Fashion School and an interim assistant dean for the College of Arts. Her creative scholarship has been shown in national and international exhibitions and is often inspired by African culture and folklore. She publishes research around the social, psychological aspects of dress for African Americans, particularly their hair. And we're going to talk about black hair today. Is it really bad, or should we choose to celebrate and find the beauty and joy in the differences and textures of black hair? But before we get to that, hello, good afternoon, morning, or evening, wherever you may be, whenever you're listening to this episode. My name is Carolyn Owens, and I'm the host of Let's Coach. Now, Let's Coach is a show that brings the best from the coaching world for you to use in your everyday life. And we talk about what coaching can do for you. We bring you some great small business ideas and some good news stories and stories about people who are paying it forward in their everyday lives. Now, when I'm not hosting the show, I serve to help you up-level your skills so you can up-level your income, your business, your career, or your life. And I love to connect with the listeners, you guys who show up here and you listen to the recordings. I appreciate you. Thank you so much. But I love to connect with you and hear what you think about the show, if you'd like to be connected with a guest that we've had on the show, or if you yourself would like to be a guest on the show. So you can find out more about me by visiting what I call my connection hub. Just go to carolyn360.com. And you'll find all the links to connect with me, my website, email, everything will be there. And I look forward to hearing from you. If you really enjoy this show, I encourage you to subscribe to it on your favorite listening platform. If it's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, we're on all of them, so check us out there. Now, in our last episode, we were joined by Adele Spraggan as we kicked off our annual relationship series. And Adele talked about how her process, SHIFT, which is 4 steps to personal empowerment, can help shift our relationships so we can find love again. So if you're in a relationship and you're thinking about calling it quits, or if you're looking at your spouse or partner and you're wondering, why am I with them? Before you call it quits, check out that episode. Adele has helped thousands of clients find happiness, and she saved relationships that, you know, the couple thought it was lost. So that's episode 172, Make a Shift and Find Love Again. You can search for it on one of the platforms I just mentioned, and then you will definitely check out the show. So what you've been waiting for today. This year, we're taking a shift on the show. Prior years during this time, we focused solely on romance and relationships. You know, but sometimes God has a different plan, right? Now, we're going to still finish the series out. We're going to kind of just postpone that a little bit and come back to that in March, because today we're talking about black hair. And when the opportunity came up to do these interviews, I could not pass it up. So joining us is Dr. Tamika Ellington, who has spent over 10 years researching the subject and actually living it her entire life. Her publications on hair have reached national and international recognition via peer-reviewed journals, as well as dress and culture encyclopedias. She's received numerous awards for her work and service, including the 2017 International Textile and Apparel Association Rising Star Award. Her upcoming projects include an exhibition entitled Textures, the History and Art of Black Hair, which will be opening at the Kent State University Museum in fall of 2021. And she's also writing an anthology entitled Navigating the Black Hair Phenomena in a White World, which is going to be released at the exhibition opening. So let's give a warm Let's Coach welcome to Dr. Tamika Ellington.
Having me on.
Dr. Ellington, are you there?
Thank you so much for having me on. Yes, I am.
Okay, we can hear you. Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm very excited about this episode. It's a topic we have never discussed on the show, and I'm very honored to have you here with us. And, you know, I got to ask, how did the concept of the book, Textures, the History and Art of Black Hair, develop? Because, I mean, you spent a lot of time researching this.
Yes, yes, absolutely. But, you know, before I talk about that, you mentioned in the intro about the fact that usually this time of year you guys are talking about love and relationships. And I just want to make it clear, you know, clear to us that hair has a whole lot to do with that because of the fact that, you know, because of the fact that as black people, unfortunately, you know, we have had to deal with this stigmatized version of what beauty is supposed to be. And a lot of times it does have an effect on who we end up with. It has an effect on who wants to date us. It has an effect on, you know, what jobs we get. So it's, you know, hair is not just about beauty. It's about our whole life, like our livelihood, you know, and definitely relationships is a part of that.
And we're going to be talking a little bit more about that, because when you said there was someone I interviewed last year, and we were talking about life and everything. And as they got to know me before we did the interview and everything, it's funny because they said, you're someone who's almost undateable. And so we'll dive more into that in a moment.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. But, yes, the idea for textures it came from all the work that I've been doing, and I'm an artist by nature. My background is actually in fashion design. So I started off my career as a fashion designer, working in several large corporations designing, you know, clothes for the company. And because my background is in fashion, beauty, you know, the idea of beauty has always been, you know, kind of wrapped up into that. And so once I became an academic, you know, I wanted to make sure that I stayed in a vein that was going to be important to me. And because there's so much of, you know, so much misunderstanding, so much that we don't know about ourselves as black people, it was only natural for me to want to do my research about black beauty and about black hair. And Textures, the book, is a derivative of the exhibition that we curated. So I curated the show. The show is also called Textures, the History and Art of Black Hair. And so that show was curated in partnership with Dr. Joseph Underwood, who's an African art historian. And when I first met him, I had been thinking about textures for several years and, you know, wanting to make what was in my brain, you know, come to life on paper and then come to life in reality. And so when I met Dr. Joseph, I knew that he was going to be the perfect partner for me, you know, to be able to make this happen. And so, you know, we got together and we've been working on developing the exhibition now for probably about almost 3.5 years or so. And we, you know, finally got everything, you know, in order. We got all of the pieces that will be in the show confirmed. Amazing, amazing artists will be a part of this show. And the Textures book is actually, it's like a, you know, like what they would call like a tabletop book.
Yes.
One of those, you know, beautiful books that you would want to keep on your tabletop. So in the book, there are several essays that we have contributed to the book. There's several authors who also do their scholarly work in regards to black hair. But the majority of the book is a compilation of beautiful imagery showing the pieces that will be exhibited in the show. And we, you know, took the time to really be able to show the depth and the breadth of what black hair and black culture and black beauty really is.
And I have to say, my copy is sitting out. I did go through it cover to cover, and it is, you know, a lot of the pictures and things that you see in there, they spark some emotions, and it gets you thinking.
Oh,
and so I do have my copy sitting out. I want people to notice it when they come. So but through this, the work that you've done, you coined the term texturism. What does that mean?
So texturism is actually a sister term to the term colorism. And I'm sure we've probably all heard of the term colorism. That term was coined years ago by Alice Walker. And colorism is basically the ideology that black people who are of lighter skin tone are better than black people who are of darker skin tone. So the lighter you are, the more intelligent, the more beautiful, the more capable, the least threatening, you know, you seem to be to the overall society, right? And with texturism, it's pretty much the same thing. It's like, you know, on the one end, you know, the straighter your hair is versus the kinkier your hair is, again, the more beautiful you appear to be, less savage, I hate to say it like that, but the less savage, you know, you happen to be, the closer you are to white, you know, the closer you are to white people, the better you happen to be. And, you know, with our hair texture, I mean, there's still so many controversial aspects of it that relate back to this whole idea of what you were talking about is bad hair or, you know, or good hair. And so really, you know, texturism is a way to help kind of break down that aspect of what it really means to be someone who has good hair or bad hair.
You know, I have to share what really motivated or inspired me to want to talk about this issue was my own hair. I've been wearing my hair in braids for several years now, and I mentioned to someone that, you know, soon I'm going to take the braids out and just have it all natural. And the response I got was, how could you? And I was like, what? Huh? What do you mean? You know, how could you do something like that? And it took me back to, because I've known this the person who said it for a very long time. And to hear that was like, whoa. It took me back for a moment to think, wow. Now I'm like, and my response is, well, I guess I really got to do it now. But I realized that there are other people, there's so many people who have this viewpoint of what natural hair is, of what good hair is. And if we kind of go back in time, we've heard all about even the Netflix movie about Madam C.J. Walker, but people don't know a lot about Willie Morrow. And he's mentioned in the book, and he has some great photos of his work. What's his role in the whole black hair story?
Oh, wow. Dr. Willie Morrow is a legend in the black hair industry. He got started as a barber. He was actually a celebrity barber, so he cut very famous people's hair. I believe he cut Martin Luther King's hair. He cut Michael Jordan and several other celebrity people, you know, would go to Dr. Morrow and get their hair cut. But he started his first barbershop opened in the 1950s. And in the 1960s, he was really, really popular because on the outside of his barbershop, you know how typically on the outside of a barbershop, you'll see the barber pole, which has its own history, right? The mm-hmm. idea of the barber pole, that red and white and blue stripe that kind of circles around. But Dr. Morrow actually had a wooden pick with Africa carved on the outside, carved on the outside of that pick. The pick was larger, like taller than the actual building where his barbershop was. So, like, the first thing you would see when you rolled up on the barbershop was this huge African pick. And he became very, very famous and well-known for that. And he had a huge hand in the civil rights movement because he actually was one of the first people to carve an African pick, like the pick that we use, like, you know, like when you look at black people who have afros and things like that, Afro pick. So he was one mm-hmm. of the first people to actually carve an Afro pick, and he used the proceeds that he received from selling those picks to help fund part of, you know, different elements of the civil rights movement.
Mm. And
yes.
Oh, no, go ahead.
No, I said, yeah, and he, you know, as he went on in his career, became an inventor. So he's invented several different types of products for hair. You know, when you think about a blow dryer, like a handheld blow dryer, and there's that little plastic comb on the end that we use oftentimes to kind of like straighten out, you know, our wet hair, right? And so mm-hmm. that plastic unbreakable comb that we attach to our hair dryer, Dr. Willie Morrow actually invented that. That was his invention. Mm-hmm. Yes, and he has to date, the reason why I even wanted to include him in the show is because to date he has the largest collection of African American historical pieces in relation to hair. And so I got a chance to go and meet with him. He lives in San Diego.
Oh.
So I flew out there. Yeah, so I flew out there, me and Dr. Joseph Underwood flew to San Diego to meet up with Dr. Morrow, and he allowed us to go through his whole collection and to pick and choose the items that we wanted for our show. And he was just an amazing, amazing man.
Wow. I didn't realize you actually got to go visit him.
Mm. Oh, yes. He was awesome. He was schooling us as we were going through the show, telling us all about the history. Yes, he was.
And, you know, the care of black hair is a major industry. We mentioned
Absolutely.
We had Madam C.J. Walker, who helped a lot of women build income, have careers. And then, as you just explained,
mm-hmm.
the work that Willie Morrow has done. And we once had, if people can remember, Dark and Lovely products. And
yes.
many of these products are now sold by, you know, white or Asian-owned companies and businesses.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible for us to regain any of that market? Or, you know, how do we lose it?
You know, that is funny. I did a study several years ago about the advertisements. They were it was all about black advertisements in from like the early like 1900s all the way up through today. And I wanted to compare what were the messages that these hair companies were giving to, you know, potential customers. And I did the research, and I separated the data based on companies that were owned by black people and then companies that were owned by white people. And in history, there has been this ebb and flow of when black people have had control, like total control over the hair industry, and then it would go down, and then it would come back up, and then it would go down again. And so right now we're kind of in a middle phase where we still have a lot of control over our black hair products, but there are companies such as, you know, some of the Korean markets, some white people, you know, like, you know, big companies like big name Procter & Gamble, you know, kind of companies that still do have some products for black people, but it's almost kind of even. And I think what's been amazing about that is how many black companies have come up, and a lot of them do focus on natural hair. So, you know, we have Carol's Daughter, and we have, oh my goodness, what else? Ajua, I actually just had a meeting with them last week. So there's lots of different companies out there that are focusing on black hair care that are actually owned by black people. So right now I would say, I would think that right about now we own probably about 65-70% of the black hair industry.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, I do
want
to mention one company that I actually get the products for my braids and everything from the oils I use, and it's Nylosi, which is co-owned by Tamika Joseph Smith and her mother, Vinette. And love their products. They're all naturally made, not all the chemicals and stuff in it. So you guys will see me mention that on my social media with this show as well, to be able to show you guys, because they do amazing things and their company is growing. But I love using their products on my braids. And, you know, we think that we have this rich history of black hair. And one of the things that I learned from the book was about Dorothy Dandridge, a beautiful, beautiful woman. And I did not know that she was the first African-American to put her foot in a white-only pool. But there's this whole long relationship of black women and pools. And our hair.
Absolutely.
If you've seen, I don't want to give any spoilers away, but if people have seen the movie Napoli Ever After, I believe it's a Netflix movie as well, that there's this scene where the women jump into the pool. And some of them talk about, I haven't been in a pool in years, because what happens if you've pressed your hair and you jump into that water, boom, you know, the joke was you come out looking like a chia pet, you know, the hair just whoosh, it puffs up, you know, but we avoid getting into pools and things like that because of our hair. So it limits our life experiences.
Absolutely. Yeah. In regards to that, like, you know, our quality of life shifts, you know, like, you know, we sacrifice part of our quality of life. And with Dorothy Dandridge, you know, that whole scenario, you know, long time ago, because of segregation and everything, you know, we didn't have access to pools. We didn't have access to beaches. And so many black people for a long, long time didn't know how to swim, you know, because we didn't have access. And, you know, and with now, you know, with today, you know, black women, you know, some of the research that I've done, some of the things that they talk about was just, you know, being able to be free. So, like, once they decided that they wanted to go natural, it almost was like a newfound freedom to them, because then they could exercise, they could get in the pool and not have to worry about the chemical reaction with the chlorine that, you know, like if they had a chemical, you know, straightener in their hair and they didn't have to worry about that chemical straightener reacting with the chlorine, you know. And so it definitely changes your quality of life, you know, once you – If you decide that you want to go natural.
Speaking of chlorine and pools, we have stories that many of us can tell with our hair experiences, but you've had some traumatic moments of your own.
Oh, yeah. Yes, absolutely. In the beginning of Textures, I talk about my hair traumas. You know, over the span of my life, I've had a number of hair traumas, and one of those is, you know, my experience when I was a little girl. I was about 5 or 6 years old, and I wanted to go to the swimming pool. My little brother and I had begged my mom to take us to the pool, and at that particular time, I actually had a curl in my hair, like a Jerry curl, because, you know, back then, that's what everybody was wearing. So,
yes.
You know, I had a Jerry curl in my hair, and my mom, you know, finally decided to take us to the pool. And what she didn't realize was that after you go to the pool, you have to wash your hair, you have to, you know, wash your body, because that chlorine is very harmful to the skin and to the hair. And because my mother was also a non-swimmer and had never really been, you know, at a pool herself, she didn't realize that, you know, that was a fatal mistake that she made when she didn't wash my hair when we came back from the pool. And so the very next morning, I woke up with no hair. Like, my hair was shoulder length. You know, my little curl that I had was a shoulder length, you know, hairstyle, when I woke up the next morning, I had probably like maybe 3 or 4 inches of hair because that chlorine, that quick overnight, took all of my hair out.
Man. And that just shows that our hair impacts so many aspects of our life. It, you know, like you were saying, it impacts how we live our lives. And I think for, you know, Black individuals, especially women, more than any other ethnic group. And
absolutely,
history shows that we started straightening our hair to assimilate, to fit in and become all American, so much so that we use these harsh chemicals. I mean, back years ago, they were really harsh chemicals. You remember, mm-hmm. if anybody, Denzel Washington, I could still see that scene in the movie, when he was playing, I think, Malcolm X, and he gets the first relaxer, and he did that scene so mm-hmm. well. But why was that even necessary for us to go through such extremes to get our hair straight?
You know, it was a means of survival for us in the beginning. You know, when we were brought over to the United States and other places around the world, the Caribbean and, you know, South America and other places where slaves were brought, you know, we were trained, we were brainwashed to believe that we were inferior, inferior in intelligence, inferior in our body, inferior in the way that we looked, inferior in our beauty. And so it became necessary for us to assimilate so that we can become employable. So after, you know, slavery was abolished in 1865, Black people came to the, like, have, you know, had the dilemma of, okay, what am I going to do? How am I going to get into the workforce? And a lot of times what that entailed was having to bleach your skin as well as having to straighten your hair. So those harsh, harsh chemicals were used on the skin to try to lighten our skin color. We used those same, you know, harsh chemicals on our hair to try to straighten our hair because mm-hmm. we were told that the way in which we naturally appear to look was not professional enough to be able to be employable. And so, you know, a long time ago, it was a means of survival for us.
I know some of the chemicals in the movie, I just watched it. I think this movie's like 13 to 15 years old, but it was a movie, the documentary Chris Rock did, Good Hair. And one of the scenes they show is how harsh these chemicals are by letting a soda can sit in some of this stuff, and it ends up, after 4 hours, literally melting the can. And you think, why would we want to put something like that? And we still use, there are still products out there that contain those chemicals. And you think, using those year after year after year, what it does to our bodies, because it absorbs into our scalp, it absorbs into our skin, our bloodstreams, and we don't think about what effect this has on us. And from a holistic health experience, as we got more educated and we started learning what this stuff really does to us, you see now that more and more women have gone back to these natural hairstyles. And I'm talking women of all ethnicities have started realizing what they've been putting on their bodies and their hair. You know, but for Black women, there's all these jokes around, ooh, you do not touch a Black woman's hair after she gets her hair done. In your research, what do women share about that?
You know, because typically when you hear that whole, you know, you don't touch a Black woman's hair, a lot of times it's when you have someone who has a straightened hairstyle and possibly even a weave or added hair, you know, onto that. Because they take so much time, you know, getting it to look the way in which it looks, they put so much money, they invest so much money into getting it to look the way that it looks. And so any disruption, you know, any person touching their hair or any kind of, you know, like I said, disruption, even like, you know, when you think about sleeping, you know, when you have certain hairstyles, you know, very popular for us to sleep like on our hands so that we wouldn't mess up our hair, right? But today, to go even deeper with don't touch a Black woman's hair, really that whole concept comes from, again, the experience that we had during slavery times, because of the fact that we were seen as non-human. You know, white people thought that they could do anything with our bodies, and one of the things that they thought that they could do was to touch us anyway and however they wanted to touch us. And so when we finally did get some freedom about ourselves, it was a means of us being able to protect, you know, our humanity and to protect our personal space, because for so many years, for so many, you know, centuries, we didn't have the luxury of protecting our personal space. And so it not only has it become, you know, a situation where, okay, don't touch my hair because I don't want to get it messed up, but it's even deeper. It's don't touch my hair, especially if you're a white person. Do not touch my hair, because you are not about to treat me like your ancestors treated our people when we were enslaved. You are not about to pet me like I'm some animal, you know?
Have you ever had someone come up to you and ask you, can I touch your hair?
Oh, yeah. You know, I wore locks, dreadlocks for a long time. And, you know, in the process of developing those, and, you know, as they get longer and longer, people become more intrigued. And, you know, they just, they want to know what it feels like. They want to know what it, you know, what they, you know, what the hair touches and what it feels like. So, you know, yeah, it's unfortunately, it's still an issue that we have. There is something that I can recommend to your audience. A couple years ago, there was a project on it's published on YouTube. I'm going to look it up real quick. And it was developed from this group of ladies who had they called it an exhibition. They had an exhibition in Central Park in New York City where they had signs up in front of themselves saying either touch my hair or don't touch my hair. And what they did was they were giving a space for where people can actually come and be able to be educated about Black people's hair. And it was really interesting in how they did it. I'm trying to find it right now. Let's see. Oh my goodness. Once I find it, I'll send you a link, and then you can share it with the audience. But they did a whole small film, like a small documentary, on what happened when they put those signs up in front of themselves about, okay, it's called, the documentary is called You Can Touch My Hair. And it was published by a company, Hair Unruled is what it was published by. And it comes in two parts. So there's one part where, you know, they talk about the first, you know, times of like what it was like, you know, for people to come. And then the part two really kind of like dives into why it's so important for Black people to be able to have agency over their own bodies. But yeah, it's called You Can Touch My Hair. It's a short film. You can find it on YouTube.
Oh, I'll definitely check it out. I haven't seen it, but I know myself there have been times when people have done the same thing where they've asked to touch my hair. And for me, I've never, ever been offended by it. Because to me it was an opportunity to have a conversation and kind of talk about it, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And you get to see, you can ask, why? What made you want to do that?
Yeah.
And you had some great conversation. And most of the time, you know, people don't mean harm. They're curious. You know, it's like, okay, with that curiosity can come, you know, a gaining of knowledge on both parts. But, you know, as we said, this impacts so much of someone's life. So let's kind of just talk about work real quick. And there was a time where hair could impact the type of jobs we've had, not being able to wear certain styles. I remember when I was going to get braids when I was in the military, and the person who I was working with in the office was telling me, it was almost as if I did, my evaluation for that year would be lower. So, of course, me being me, I got the braids. But our, you know, the person who was over us at the time, when she found out, and she was not a black female. She was a white female. She was not happy when she found out that that comment
yeah.
was made, and she took care of that right away because she was like, why, you know, she was surprised. And the person who said it to me happened to be a black male, that he would try to have my, you know, grades lowered if I did this. And so it does, there's
oh
this stereotype about impacts, you know, our the type of job we have, how we wear our hair. And there was a time period where this was very, very much true, but do you find that we're getting away from that?
Yeah. You know, there's a couple things to unpack there. The fact that that whole comment that you were just mentioning came from another black person just really, really, you know, shows how deeply ingrained this self-hate has been, you know, throughout our culture, as well as just how much we've been brainwashed, you know. So, you know, it doesn't surprise me that that comment came from another black person, but it really just, again, you know, shows how much work there is to be done in our culture for us to unbrainwash ourselves. But, you know, mm-hmm. In the Army, so to speak, within the past couple years, there have been, you know, some regulations that were put in place that did restrict the kind of hairstyles that black women could wear. And so since this hair topic has become really hot and popular, you know, the military has had no choice but to go back and change up some of the rules to allow black women to be black women and just wear their hair however, you know, they needed to be able to wear it. And so also, too, when we look at other legislation such as the Crown Act that was started in California in 2019, they had to start that because, again, discrimination is very real when it comes
what
to
is
black
that?
Hair discrimination. And then the Crown Act?
What is the Crown Act?
Oh,
yes.
You have to – Oh, yes, you got to find out about the Crown Act. So the Crown Act, it's an act that went into law it started in August, let me see, I think it was August 2000 or July 2000, it was the summer of 2019, and California put this into place because there were still people being discriminated against. Oh, let me see. Okay, wait a minute. It says the Crown Act will go into effect on January 1st, 2020. And there's other states around the United States that are also trying to implement the Crown Act within their own legislation. I know for sure in Ohio, where I'm at, they're trying to, you know, adopt a part of what that Crown Act is. So, yeah, July 3rd, 2019, Governor Gavin Newsom signed the law about the Crown Act. And basically, it's just a way in which it says the definition of race to include historically associated by race, including hair texture and protective style. So it's basically giving public institutions legislation that they must follow whenever they're in the process of hiring a person of color or, you know, particularly a black person, and that, you know, they're not allowed to discriminate. And New York also followed up California, and they came out with their mm-hmm. own black hair legislation, and I think they came out with theirs a little bit later on in the month. But New York and California were the very first states that made it a law that you could not discriminate against people because of their hair.
Oh, wow.
And again,
you know,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I said that's interesting because how you just phrased it there about you can't discriminate against anyone because of their hair, because I actually know
mm-hmm.
there are several, you know, non-black Americans who have locked their hair as well. There's a individual in Maryland, he's a white male, and he has some gorgeous locks. I mean, he's been growing them for years, and he proudly wears them, walks around. But I could imagine what he goes through with wearing those locks and different things he experienced, and he's probably been limited on the top jobs he can have as well. And, you know, it's as you embrace the culture and other ethnic groups embrace it, that it, you know, that has to be in place for all of us.
Yeah, well, the big thing that is the difference between that particular individual and our culture is the fact that he is a white male. So he already has advantages over us that, you know, that has been, you know, written in history, right? So if he is wearing dreadlocks, he probably still does not get that negative association that black people get when they just wear their hair in its natural state. So he's not experiencing the same type of stigma, the same type of, you know, discrimination. So, you know, it was really important that this law be put into place because not only, you know, black people still having to deal with racism, but also now dealing with, you know, discrimination based on, you know, what we look like and on our hair, you know? So,
So do you find that a lot of black individuals will run from the conversation? Because when I was discussing that I was going to be doing the show, usually, you know, this is Let's Coach with Carolyn. We have a lot of leadership and business type of topics that we do. So this was a kind of changing course for us in the way we do the show. But it was not, you know, a lot of my, you know, black counterparts were like, do you really, is this a show you're going to do? Where it was my, you know, white counterparts who were like, oh, my God, that's cool. It's exciting. They were ready and encouraging the show. But I found that, and it was, you know, that was like, huh, you guys are pushing away from hearing this and discussing it. Do you find that there are a lot of black individuals that pull away from the conversation?
Oh, absolutely, because there's so much hurt. You know, we have been culturally damaged. You know, when you think about black hair, I mean, just the internal hurt that we have because of the history of how we were treated, you know. You know, again, you know, when we were enslaved, unfortunately, you know, we were animalized and our hair was considered wool instead of hair. And so because of that, it just instilled so much hurt generation after generation. And so because it's still very controversial, you know, especially amongst black women, like so those individuals who wear their hair natural versus those individuals who wear their hair straight, and there's almost like this this unwritten, unsaid divide between the culture. You know, because there's a different thought process about what beauty really is, especially when you look at those women that are still wearing, you know, these wigs, and now they've even, like, upped the technology with the wigs, and they have the baby hair in the wigs, and it's just a lot, right? It is really a lot. But they don't want to talk about it because there's still so much hurt, you know? There's still so much hurt. And see, in regards to white people, they are interested because they want to learn. You know, those ones that are sincerely wanting to learn, they're interested because they want to learn. But then there's also other people who want to, you know, who still fetishize, you know, black beauty. And so, you know, it's hard to understand why there is a difference between how white people and black people, you know, are going to take that topic of black hair. But again, you know, we've just been hurt for so many years. You know, when it comes to who we are as black people, and it's hurtful to talk about. People don't want to talk about it because there is so much hurt still there.
I mentioned that the documentary that Chris Rock did, Good Hair, and he got a lot of flack for that. There are a lot of people who got upset with him. And, you know, one of the subjects that I promised we'd get to that he highlighted was this whole thing about dating black women and their hair. And I mentioned that someone that kind of deemed me as being undateable, and it wasn't focused on my hair. It was just because of what I've accomplished in my life, that I kind of fit in this middle category where, you know, it's like, some people will think, well, I'm not, you know, up there to be able to date who she is. Not that I have a lot or anything like that, but I did, you know, getting through school, all the things that I've been able to do. And then there's the other higher echelon. It's like, well, she's not up here with us, you know, so it puts you in this middle category. But when you put the aspect of hair into it, it makes the scenario even worse because, you know, yes. I mentioned I'm considering going all natural now. I haven't had a perm in about 4 years now, and I've been wearing these braids. And when I take them out, my hair has grown tremendously. So we're talking, and for those in the black community, you'll understand this, I'm talking about an Angela Davis type of afro that I would have. and so when you know, it's like how that perception of, you know, black women with natural hair are not attractive. And because, mm-hmm. and it's honestly been said that because a man can't get his fingers through her hair.
Oh, my word. Oh, my word. You know, that it just, it drives me up a wall. That was one of my other hair traumas that I talked about, was the whole idea of dating. You know, because, again, we have been so freaking brainwashed that even our black brothers, many times, they can't even see the beauty in us because they're so brainwashed, you know, and they expect that we try to follow this white standard of beauty, that there's no way that we would ever, any person of color can even, you know, halfway accomplish trying to get to that false sense of what beauty is. And so because we've been so brainwashed, you know, they look at us as if we are less. We have too much attitude, or, you know, we're not as beautiful. We're not as feminine because of the fact that we're strong. And so it's just a bunch of hoo-ha, in my opinion, because it's a reflection of how brainwashed we have been against our own selves, and how much self-hate. When you look at a black woman, if you're a black male and you have no interest in dating a black woman, that says so much about who you are as a black man, because it says that you, when you look in the mirror at yourself, you don't see someone who's of quality. You know,
your
so you have to go outside. Right. You have to go outside to find whatever you think is quality, which is an absolute shame, you know. So, yeah, again, it's the hurt. We've been hurt so bad. And, you know, we still, you know, unfortunately, you know, black women, in the whoever, you know, is in the dating scene and maybe using these online dating services to date, you know, research has found that black women are the least desirable women on these dating apps. You know, and I'm taking that to heart, because I'm newly single. I just got a divorce. And so, you know, now I'm going to have to, you know, get back out and start dating. And I'm like, I don't know what this is going to be like, you know. If today we are still considered the least beautiful, that's a problem.
It is, you know, because that's one of the statistics I talk about in our romance and relationship series, is that black women are at the bottom, as well as for men. It's the Asian men who are at the bottom. And,
absolutely.
You know, some of the things that the way these Asian men are treated. But if it, which reminds me of, if anyone watches that show with Issa Rae, Insecure, Andrew on there, who happens to be an Asian male, who's dating the black female, and in, you know, real life, his, I don't know if she's his wife or girlfriend still, but she is a dark-skinned, beautiful black woman who he's dating in real life, you know, so... you know, you look at the statistics, that's where, for how, you know, not just black women, but how some of these Asian men have been treated on these dating apps is horrific. It's horrible, some of the things that's been said to them when they do the studies and the research. You know, from my perspective, I believe there's beauty in all of us. And I understand what you're saying when you say, if a black man can find nothing beautiful, nothing attractive about a black woman.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't care who you date, but when you look at your sister and your mother and you're saying that they're not, you know, they're ugly, that's a different story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's something more deeper, because there is so much beauty in all of us out here. And I think that's what you love about the world, is that you've got, you know, such diversity, so many. And I mean, that's what I love about the work to do, the people I get to interact with. I live in a very, very diverse world. You know, but the insecurities that have developed with black women because we're seen as not attractive, which stems from, I believe it was Maya Angelou said something about your hair being your crown, your glory. And honestly, she says she didn't get a perm till she was 70 years old. She did never got a perm. It was she was 70 when she finally got one. And I have to wonder, I would love to ask her, God rest her soul, why, what changed that she actually did that, you know? But I think it's a mindset that we have to shift, and we have to begin to embrace and own our hair and own our beauty.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
We talk about this struggle that only women go through this. That's what a lot of the focus is on, but it impacts men as well. When we think about the afros and the dreads and the cornrows and the locks, you think about the, I remember when Ice-T and Snoop, you know, for those who are familiar with the rap world, they're two of the, you know, most popular rappers that ever existed, when they actually, they would straighten their hair. You know, and I tell you, they, of course, took no, they didn't care, you know, that they were in a position and had the financial means to take that stand. And you think about, I love when Al Sharpton jokes and says, you know, he was asked about his wife and does his wife let him touch her hair? And he said, the better question is, do I let her touch mine? You know, because of how he presses, you know, he perms his hair. Which it's a great story on. It was actually James Brown that got him to perm his hair. So I'm not going to get, you guys have to watch the documentary Good Hair by Chris Rock to get that whole story. But these, you know, everybody has jokes about Al Sharpton's hair, James Brown's hair when he would dance and how that hair would be, you know, Ice-T, Snoop, what they were able to do. And kind of shift, and you think a lot of black men now are getting back to the locks. I think that Lenny Kravitz by far has the best locks in the world. God, you know, if he's out there, hey, I'd love to meet you someday. Like, can I do the interview, please? But, you know, he has these gorgeous locks and stuff, but there's this kind of either you're a drug dealer, you're a bohemian, you know, kind of person. If you have these hairstyles, that's how they end up, or the men are exotic. You know, you picture them coming out of the water with this beautiful cut body and the locks, you know, dripping, coming out of the water. That's what you see. You know, that's what, so they go through their own version of how are they going to wear their hair, what type of jobs they have as well.
Yeah, they do. And again, you know, black people overall are fetishized, you know, for different aspects, you know, fetishized for parts of our body, you know, women, of course, you know, are fetishized for, you know, their derriere, fetishized with the lips, you know, black men are, you know, fetishized with other parts of their body. So, you know, it becomes a situation where, black men are also suffering. However, you know, they still have the advantage of being male, you know, so they still have that advantage, you know, so they have definitely gone through issues. There's been several cases where black men were fired from their jobs. I know one in particular that I can think about was at FedEx, and this was about maybe 10 years ago. There were two black men that were working for FedEx, and both of them had dreadlocks. And they were told that if they wanted to keep their jobs, they had to cut off their locks. Well, of course, they went to court. They went to court and sued FedEx, you know, because of that.
Oh, wow.
And yes, you know, yeah, black men have definitely had to deal with it as well. However, black men are not subjected to the whole idea of what it means to be beautiful. You know, and when you look at the deeper meaning behind that, you know, and black men are more or less, again, fetishized. There's more black men that date outside of their race than black women who date outside of their race because people are fetishized by black men. You know, so, you know, their experience, again, you know, they have definitely been discriminated against. But when it really comes down to the hurtful hurt, it's mostly us black women because of that whole idea of that standardized, you know, white, you know, beauty ideology that we have to live up to.
And you mentioned, like, so when we talk about dating outside of our race, because black women are judged harshly if they choose to do that, where black men aren't. I mean, you know, they'll they would. I remember growing up and everything. It was more so if you even thought about it, or somebody you knew, oh wow, if you were dating outside of your race, they would look down on you. Black men were like, how could you? But it was okay for them, and I think that still kind of lingers, where you'll see more and more, because you look at the commercials that are coming out recently now. I notice if you look carefully, a lot of some of these commercials now have the black female with the man of another culture, another race, not even necessarily American, but, you know, there's a man that is not the same race as this black woman, and you see the, you know, the biracial kids, everything. That's starting to change in media images that we're starting to see. We go back to, I got to bring up Lenny Kravitz again. You look at his mom, I believe, was one of, you know, the first couples on TV where his mom was it the Jeffersons, and she was married on the show to a white male, and that was one of the first, I guess, public media shows. And Star Trek, Captain Kirk, when he kissed Aurora, I think that's her name. That was probably the first TV kiss of it, you know, where they did. But it's still a stereotype where, you know, it's seen as, you know, you black women should not date outside their race.
You know, there's so much to unpack there. I mean, again, it really does go back to, you know, what happened with us during slavery times. You know, black women, in regards to their sexuality, were definitely mistreated and mishandled. Black men were also mistreated and mishandled, but their experience was a little bit different in that black women ended up having to forcefully bear the children of their slave masters, and, you know, having to have, you know, actual, you know, human proof that you were, you know, that you were raped, you know, by your slave master. You know, that does a lot to your community. That does a lot to your family culture and that kind of thing. So it's weighed a lot heavier on black women because, you know, it was almost like, you know, we wanted to make sure that we were protected against other cultures, particularly white men, because of the fact how, you know, we were, you know, misused and mishandled during that time. You know, black men, they did also, you know, were subjected to their slave master raping them, or possibly even whomever the master's wife was using them as a sexual object, but they had no proof. You know, that was something that was done in the dark, but a black woman couldn't hide that because if she got pregnant, there was proof right there that she was mishandled. And so it becomes a situation for us where, you know, we're looked at in a different way because if we purposefully allow, you know, for us to be mishandled, that's kind of what, you know, it comes down to, is like, are we purposefully allowing ourselves to be mishandled by someone of another race? You know what I'm saying? So that's where that comes from. That's the reason why there's such a difference, you know, in the fact. And again, you know, because men, because of the, you know, gender standards, you know, men aren't judged as harshly, you know, as women.
And that's one of the things you research and that you talk about, you teach about, is some of the sociological and psychological aspects that we go through in the different ethnic communities. So you have an upcoming project, this expedition, that's entitled exhibition that's entitled Textures, the History and Art of Black Hair, which is opening at Kent State University this fall. Can you talk, Leah, what is it about and what do you want people to gain from this?
This exhibition is a way to bring understanding, and I think what's so crucial about the show is the fact that it is going to be featured at a predominantly white institution. And this is going to be one of the first exhibitions there at this museum where the show is all about blackness, unapologetically blackness. And it's really important for people who are non-black and people who are black, but for people who are non-black to really get a chance to dive into our culture. When myself and Dr. Joseph Underwood, when we did the curation for the show, we really wanted to give, you know, a historical standpoint of what the show, like what, you know, black hair was. So we luckily, you know, because Dr. Joseph has the amazing hookup, he's an amazing curator himself, you know, trained in France, you know, how to do, you know, museum curation, and he has a lot of connections, and he was able to get us some authentic Egyptian artwork for the show that actually depicts black people braiding their hair. And we wanted, like I said, we wanted to show the history of it, where black hair, like where it came from. And then we wanted to also be able to talk about the politics, because even if, you know, black people did not want their hair to be considered, you know, politicized, it was politicized regardless because of the controversy of what it meant to be a black person. You know, so we're going to, you know, have pieces that represent that, you know, that the politicizing of black hair. One of the pieces that we have is the authentic wanted poster that Angela Davis had, where the FBI was looking for her, you know, when she had that big afro, you know. And so that's one of the pieces that we're going to be showing in the exhibition. But we wanted to show the history, we wanted to show the hair politics, but then we also wanted to show the joy and being black and what it meant to be, you know, to have black hair and be joyful and self-accepting. And so, you know, the exhibition will cover those three categories. And, yeah, it's going to be an amazing, amazing show. We were really blessed to be able to get some amazing artists to contribute work. We got Kehinde Wiley, who is one of the most well-known contemporary artists today. He's the artist that did the portrait of President Barack Obama. And so we were able to get a piece, yes. So one of Kehinde Wiley's paintings will be in the exhibition. So we were able to get a lot of amazing, amazing artists to contribute work to the show. And we just want to help educate. We want to be able to bring an understanding that beauty does not just mean white beauty. Beauty is so much more expansive and so much more diverse. And so if we can get some people to get a better understanding of what beauty is for black people, then we've done our job. You know, that's what the goal is to bring people together and to create a better understanding, you know.
So one of the things, and I'm going to talk more about the exhibition in a moment, but I know as I'm listening to you and as you've put this together, one of the things in pushback that often comes back is what about other ethnic groups? The world isn't just black and white. There's the Hispanic community, the Asian community. What is different that we have to focus on the black community?
Well, black people's hair is really like the only hair texture that is like ours, right? When you look at people that are Latino, their hair texture is pretty straight. You know, when you look at other people, like Indian people, people that are from India, their hair texture is very straight. When you look at Asian people, of course, their hair texture is very, very straight. Black people are the only ones on this planet that have texturized hair like we have. And, of course, you know, there's a lot of history and why that is. You know, when we were over in Africa, we had to have hair that protected our scalp from that hot sun. And so that's why we evolved. You know, our hair was, you know, God created our hair very curly, but we are the only people on this planet who have the kind of hair texture that we have. And we are the only people on this planet whose hair texture has been demonized, has been stigmatized, has been said to be unbeautiful, you know. So it's important that people be able to understand that beauty is a very diverse situation. It's not just straight hair. You know, it's all hair.
It'd be great to see you do something around our body structures as well, because I know we've had, you know, hips and backsides for years, but
mm-hmm.
it wasn't until J-Lo came out with hers that it became, oh, it's a good thing, you know. So it would be great if you could do something around that as well. So, as you said, this is thing about being able to get your fingers through the hair, but I will tell you, it's just as nice touching black hair as well. When and where is this exhibition taking place?
So we'll be opening September 10th, 2021, at the Kent State University Museum in Kent, Ohio. Kent is about an hour or so southeast from Cleveland, and from the Akron area, about 35 minutes east from Akron. So if you're, you know, in the area and you want to come and stop by, you know, please do. The show will be up from September 2021 all the way through August 2022. So you'll have plenty of time. It'll be up for almost the whole full year. You'll have plenty of time to come by and see the show.
You know, it's funny because I have people who ask me where was it and that they wanted to come see it, and they don't live in the Ohio area.
Yes.
But, again, it's
yes.
funny because a lot of these people are not people of color. They want to support the work that you're doing, and I think that's awesome. And you have a book of the same title, Textures, The History and Art of Black Hair. How can people – I will say, when I went to get a copy – of this book, what I had to do to get it, because it was sold out in so many places. So I know Amazon's got it right now. They're trying to ship it for other people.
Yep.
My copy is out on display. But where can they get a copy of this book?
So the main places, you can contact the Kent State University Museum, and the museum has some books on available. And then again, you can get them from Amazon, but we actually are in the process of possibly having to do a third print. So we've already gone through the second print already. And so we're probably going to have to do a third print in order, the show hasn't even started yet. So once the show starts, the books are really going to fly off the shelf. So, we're creeping into the third print, but right now, it's been difficult to get, but Amazon, as well as the Kent State University Museum. So if you contact the museum, they can point you in the direction to get it.
It's funny. I had to get mine through the Getty Museum.
But
the fact that, in purchasing the book, it did support the, their work that they're doing. So I was glad it was like a bonus thing to do for me. By the time – that was the only place I could find it to be able to get a copy because they are – and I got to give a shout-out to the person who definitely introduced us and connected to us, who's worked for me when I was in the military, Corey Wallace. I know he's listening today. And, after the years of serving with him, he has not forgotten me, always looking out for me, and I thank him so much. So, hey, Corey, we both appreciate you. and so for you, what's the next steps in your career? I understand you're working on a new book, which is called Navigating the Black Hair Phenomena. It's coming out at the exhibition?
During the time frame of the show, ideally, I would love to be able to have the book ready during the opening when we open up the show so that I can also do a book signing at that time. But I'm not sure, with everything, because with COVID, things have just been kind of slowed down with the production of the book. So I'm hoping that it will be ready when we do the opening. I can do a book signing and sign some copies for people and be able to get them out that way. But Navigating the Black Hair Phenomenon in a White World is the title. And that book is an anthology. Anthology is a collective work of different scholars, research on black hair phenomenon, different elements of black hair phenomenon. So we talked a little bit earlier about career. We talked about relationships. We talked about identity. And so the book will cover all of those aspects from six other scholars. So myself, I wrote for the book, and then I was able to get six other scholars that do work with black hair to also write for the book. And I was really excited because I'm sure you guys have probably heard of the book Hair Story that was written by Ananya Bird and Lori Fartz. It's a very famous book. I think they've already had their second or third edition of Hair Story. And we were blessed to be able to even get Lori Tharp. So she wrote a chapter for the Textures book. And then also, too, you know, worked with us on the Navigating the Black Hair Phenomenon book. So and we had this other woman who is a black hair psychologist, Dr. Afia Mbilisaka. She's located in D.C. And she has an amazing podcast. Yeah, she has an amazing podcast where she talks about psychological, you know, difficulties with black hair. And so she also, I think she wrote one of the foreword or the afterword for the book. And so it's going to be an amazing book. But, yeah, I mean, it's just another way to really help to break down the struggle, the black beauty struggle.
So what advice do you have for the woman who is listening to this, who's struggling with her hair journey?
You know, it's funny. Someone had asked me, like, if there was something that I could tell my younger self, you know, about my hair. one thing, what it would be, don't believe the hype. That's what I would tell myself because, you know, when you think about it, you know, society has told us over and over again what we should look like. And if you are someone who is struggling on your hair journey, stop struggling and stop listening to the hype. Stop listening to what society says and do what's the best thing for you to do. Find a way in which you can accept your own beauty, because that's really what it comes down to. Can you accept yourself as you are without having to try to assimilate into whatever the society is saying?
That's probably that's a powerful statement and a question, really. Can you
accept
yourself? And I think that's the bottom line, that we have to learn how to accept ourselves first and own it. So I'm going to ask you, this is like that I think this is the best way to wrap up this episode. And first, thank you so much for being here with us. But is black hair bad hair?
Oh, my goodness. You know, so many people still believe that it is. You know, when you look at the media, when you look at popular culture, such as songs, you know, artists such as Nicki Minaj and other, like, rap artists will talk about the fact that black women have to straighten their hair and, you know, calling them nappy headed, you know, HOEs, right? You know, we really do have to look within ourselves and stop trying to acquire this false sense of what beauty is, you know, because it's false. You know, if we cannot be happy and be accepting of ourselves, then, you know, it's a problem, and it's always going to be a problem. I would love to get to a point where we don't have to call our hair a hair journey. You know, I would love to get to the point where we don't have to call it a hair journey. Why does it have to be a hair journey? You know, why can we just can't be?
You know, your research and the work that you have done goes so much deeper than just what we've talked about today. And I know there are people who are often looking, you know, to find someone like you to interview or to come speak at an event, or, you know, just being able to reach out to you. How can they find you?
I'm on Facebook, I'm on Instagram, and I'm on LinkedIn. You can also find me, and this is just going to be for the next couple months. You'll be able to also find me via Kent State University. If you go to the Kent State University website and type in my name, Dr. Tamika Ellington, Tameka Ellington, Ellington, you'll be able to find me there at the Kent State University website. But I am actually on a journey of my own in regards to my career, you know, transition. I'm going to soon be leaving the university so that I can go out on my own and, you know, do my business full time. So I'm a speaker. You know, I go around and I motivate young people, and I've written other, you know, books, empowerment books. And so, you know, my calling has now been to empower people. And that's really what this whole concept of the black hair research that I've been doing has really just been about empowerment. You know, it's been about trying to empower people who have been, you know, who have had their power taken away from them. And so, you know, that's my goal in life, is to be able to empower people. And so I'm stepping out on faith, and I'm going to be leaving the university. I've been there now for almost 15 years, and, you know,
wow.
I'm going to step out and. So, but yeah, you guys can find me on Facebook. You can find me on LinkedIn, Instagram. Yep.
And I believe there's definitely a link. And if you look at the write-up for this, there's a link to her Instagram as well as to the exhibition and the book. So you can definitely find those there. And I want to say, you know, this has been an amazing interview. Wow. And I always like wrap up by asking the guests this question. And I do want to say I look forward. I'd like to have you back when you go out on your own and you start doing the speaking to talk more about women's empowerment. I think that would be an excellent topic to dive in a little bit further. But you have 30 seconds to leave the audience with a message, a key takeaway that you want them to remember. What is that?
You know, I'm always, again, you know, I'm about empowerment. And so when I think about in regards to the message that we've been talking about today in regards to self-acceptance and black beauty is you deserve to be able to have a life where you are not feeling pressured to follow the overall dominant standard of beauty. You deserve to have a life where you can be happy with whom you are without trying to change who you are for a bigger overall culture. Be happy. Know that you are deserving of the love, that you're deserving of being able to, you know, respect yourself, love yourself, and just be happy and have that, you know, exude that black joy that I know you have inside of you, you know. Be happy and love yourself, love your hair.
For our listeners out there, this is a little different than what you're used to here on Let's Coach with Carolyn. But as you know, I started the show by saying this is a wonderful topic to discuss. Depending on when you're listening to this episode, it's February, and this is Black History Month. And I say you guys got a little bit of history today, as well as hopefully some more understanding of this whole black hair phenomena. You know, is black hair bad hair? No. It comes down to being able to embrace yourself, accept yourself, and own it. Own it. So hold your head up high. I want to thank you for joining us for another exciting episode of Let's Coach. And we are going to continue the conversation in our next episode, episode 174. We're going to bring Adrian Vincent Sutton, who's the author of a middle school young adult type of book. It's called Bad Hair Day. And it focuses on a whole different look about this whole thing about black hair. So I invite you to join us. That's going to air as the next episode, which will be a couple days from now. I think it's Wednesday, 2 p.m. But you can always, as you know, come back and listen to the recordings, listen to and go back and, hey, play this one again. You know, share it. As always, you know, I appreciate you joining us and listening to this show. We have a whole lot of exciting shows planned throughout this year. And until our next episode, I want you to stay safe out there and remember, if it ain't broke, make it better. Thanks again, and have an awesome, blessed week, everyone. And Dr. Ellington, Dr. Tamika Ellington, thank you so much.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Bye, everyone.